episode 803 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville. Oh gosh, it seems like forever since we've done a show. I'm looking forward to talking about stuff tonight.
That's right. And we are going to be catching up on a couple weeks of episodic discussion in the next two episodes of our own. And this one goes back a little bit into the end of April, or the latter part of April. So, yeah, things were a little bit nice and quiet then, not so much now, as things pick back up for the Mace, quote-unquote, sweeps and finales and so forth. But we still had a good amount of material on the list. Actually, I need to just very quickly confirm that we have everything in the order that it's supposed to be. I think we do. But we had, how many episodes here? 17 shows, 17 episodes, 16 of which we scored. So, not a bad week. This was actually a pretty good one here. But yeah, as usual, we are going to get into, you know, first of all, the bottom three, rather, and then the top three, and then whatever it is that comes to our particular... strikes our particular fancy in between. But before we do any of that, Gary, if you could give us a disclaimer.
Yes. As John has just said, these are episodes from a few weeks ago, so we're going to assume that if the show interested you, that you've had a chance to watch it and digest it and listen to our insightful commentaries, and heck, maybe even give us a call afterwards or email us and let us know what you think about our opinions on these shows. So we'll be going through everything along the way, who lives, who dies, twists, turns, and anything else that came up in these shows are fair game, so consider yourself warned.
That's right. And we are going to go ahead and start with our bottom three. And there's going to be a theme in these next two episodes of ours of surprise when it comes to the company that is being kept in the bottom three. And we're going to get right off on one here that I don't think any of us expected was going to be in the bottom. And Gary, I'm kind of surprised that you didn't get to this one, but that's okay.
It's not for lack of trying. I just wasn't able to. And... I'll admit that, you know, Capaldi's never been my favorite, so I wouldn't say it's not a must-see live for me. I don't want to not know the storyline, but if I didn't see it that very week it's released, it doesn't eat me up at night. But some people it does. Not. Yes, I know.
I mean, it is Doctor Who. There's usually something that's eating you up at night.
Well, you beat me to it, John. I was going to say, unless something actually was eating people up at night.
Yes, it's possible. Okay, so Doctor Who, Series 10, Episode 2, Smile. The Doctor takes Bill to a spectacular city on a distant planet, but finds it bare of colonists. This one came in at an average of 7.5. And Edmund did give us a note on this one. And in this case, it was simply felt like a fairly generic Doctor Who plot. With some nice Doctor pontificating in the wind-up, I suppose so. The biggest problem that I'm having with this particular episode is that... Well, okay. I'll just tell you this much, Gary. I don't want to spoil too much, but let me just tell you this much. One of the parts of the premise of this episode was that people wore these little badges that showed emojis. And you yourself could not see your own badge, but others could see your badge. And based on the emoji that popped up, they could have a fairly nice idea of what your emotional state was.
Okay.
Now, if you put that on a brand new character that you don't know too well, you figure that probably by the end of the hour, you're going to have a little bit of insight into the inner workings of the mind of that character, right?
One would assume it's some small window into their soul, yes.
Yes.
One would assume.
Oh, jeez. And I'm seeing this very interesting schism, it seems, in the character or in the fandom for this particular series, and it has much less to do with people being into Capaldi than it does being into the new companion. I think that there are a lot of people that are very tepid on the new companion and feel like she's not bringing a whole lot to the table. And there's a really surprisingly vocal number of people who are saying, we love this new companion. And it's really hard for either side to understand the other's point of view at all. Because for me, as one of the people who is a bit tepid on this character, despite feeling like, you know, hey, on paper, it makes a whole lot of sense to bring a completely different perspective to things as a companion, you know, someone who's more from a working class type of situation, you know, diversity is clearly a nice addition here where, hey, if you go to historical time periods, having a person of color as your companion, hey, that's going to add a little something. You know, we got a little bit of that with Martha back in the day, but not nearly as much as I feel like she was still kind of coming from a bit of a privileged background. I think that this is someone who is coming in from very much an unexpected corner, and you'd think that that would make for a lot of different areas of social commentary that the show is very well known for. There's a little bit of an interesting difference between, you know, Capaldi's kind of attitude and what somebody from a more down-to-earth background, so to speak, can bring to the table. And yet, I never feel like they really show us who Bill is. They tell us a little bit here and there, but I don't have a sense of the character. The character feels so generic to me. And just not memorable at all. And I definitely didn't feel that way about Amy. I mean, that's kind of a, at this point, hardly a surprise to anybody. I think for Clara, it was not that way. And I don't think it had anything to do with their, you know, background, you know, racially or any of that, or the fact that they were very conventionally attractive companions. I think it had to do with the fact that, you know, Moffat likes to make the companions walking, talking plot devices. And sometimes, for better or worse, that makes them easy to remember. They have very strong characteristics because of that. And I feel like Bill, being very intentionally written as not that kind of character, is coming across a little bit bland and generic. And yeah, it's unfortunate because it's one of those deals where I sit back and I tell myself I want to like this character.
But or at least give them a chance,
reason. Yeah, they're not giving me a reason. They're just throwing her at me. It's like, guys, not the way that it should have gone. So that's unfortunate. Also unfortunate is Designated Survivor, Season 1, Episode 17, The Ninth Seat, as President Kirkman struggles to put together a new Supreme Court. FBI agent Hannah Wells goes undercover and discovers much more than she ever could have imagined. This coming in at a 7.5. And quite frankly, the problem here is that, all right, so you come up with a show, you develop a really nice 13-episode arc, because that's your initial episode order, and then you get more episodes.
Oh, and
it's clear that they had no idea what to do with that. Because there's no compelling villain. There's a lot of people that are kind of minor, kind of, what do you want to call it? Minor distractions, minor adversaries, but there is no central face of the opposition anymore. So it's just looping these seemingly insurmountable issues and then this, you know, post-terrorist attack government structure just happens to have quirks about it that allows this insurmountable problem to be solved. And they just keep doing it over and over again. And it reads like the West Wing Light. And I think that the first few times they did it, it's fine. It's just not working for me quite as much right now.
Now, did they, you know, I'm not following this particular series. Did they really, in a sense, wrap up the main storyline already?
Yes.
Okay.
That ended at the end of those 13 episodes.
Okay, so it wasn't like they had filler to just squeeze it in, but they actually had to start from scratch.
Yeah. They kind of had to just pick up where they left off, and I don't think that they knew how to develop a new arc on the fly in the number of episodes that they have. They're trying, but it's not really working for me.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, and you're right. That's almost odd nowadays to get, you know, get extra episodes tacked on, and they almost always want to go to another season at that point. So it's definitely a challenge in this new modern programming world to do. Now, storyline aside, do the characters ring true? Does it feel like it meshes together?
It kind of does, and it doesn't. That's what I'm getting at, is that it definitely feels like they're tacking it on.
Okay. Oh, that's a shame. So what poor, unfortunate show has sunk to the very bottom of the bowels of our list on this fine episode?
Oh, what could it possibly be? Oh, wait. I have a pretty good idea.
Oh, it's glowing. Yes.
Season 1, Episode 6, Immortal emerges from cave. Danny gets an unexpected invitation. Claire and Colleen face a challenging decision. Joy worriedly confronts her brother. And this one came in at an average of 7.25, which, again, for Iron Fist, not necessarily bad. But, Gary, your thoughts on this in brief.
Well, I really do feel the show is getting better. I think it continues to get better every week. I don't know that that's because of the main character, however. The supporting cast is becoming much more fleshed out, and you I don't know if identify is the right word, but I'm beginning to be invested in the characters and looking forward to see what happens with them. And it's really not Danny. It's a lot of the side characters, Colleen Wing, Joy, even Claire to some extent, although is Claire a watcher? Cause she shows up everywhere. Just a side note. Anyway. So I'm curious to see, I'm curious to follow them more so in a sense than Danny. Danny, he's got the iron fist, and he's got this basically this destiny that's been prophesized that he's going to defend against or take out the hand. I'm not quite sure the exact prophecy, but definitely defend against them. And so we know at some point there's got to be some huge battle against some huge guy, person, maybe even the madam herself, if we get the sense that she is definitely not revealing everything about herself other than she's very long lived. We know he's going to have this big battle at some point, so that's almost a foregone conclusion. But what happens to everybody else is where all the flux is and the interest, because you don't know. Anything could happen. Look at Joy's brother, and seems like he's having a hard time with everything that's going on, and Joy's stepping up a little bit more in this episode and more, and so those are the characters that I find myself drawn to more so. I think they're much more interesting. John, what are you seeing? Do you see the same thing?
Seeing some of it.
Okay.
I give this one a 7. Which is not necessarily horrible, obviously very mediocre from our point of view. But the reason that I went there is that Danny is just coming across to me as a guy who's just kind of good vaguely at Kung Fu. And that's probably not what the Iron Fist should be. But beyond that, in this episode, he was up against 3 or 4 different opponents that were sent to him by the hand, and they all seemed to be almost like background characters in a Mortal Kombat movie. And
yeah, they're sort of noticed that it was going to happen. Felt like that too. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And they got those little poles with the notes, and they're like, oh.
Yes. Yeah. And then one of the adversaries was basically sexy spider girl. And while I didn't mind the visual, it would just really felt cheesy. And
I thought that would be your favorite, John. Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was the favorite part of the episode, but that wasn't saying a whole lot. But because really what it brought to mind was that basically it feels like maybe I've said this a little bit here and there before, but I'm probably going to say it a lot going forward. I think this was the tone, this episode is pretty close to the tone that they were going for the series as a whole, which is if Luke Cage was a kind of modern take on a blaxploitation film, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It had a very specific tone, it was stylized a certain way, it was very different from what we had seen with Daredevil or even Jessica Jones, where Jessica Jones was kind of like a more mature-themed Veronica Mars kind of show. Basically, this feels like what they were trying to go for here was that they knew how problematic Danny Rand is as a character, and with that knowing tongue-in-cheek kind of attitude, they were going for a series that was almost like this kind of character belongs in an 80s or 90s kung fu or ninja action movie, where everything's a little over the top. The dialogue's cheesy, the adversaries are a bit cheesy, he's naive and kind of doesn't know what to do, there's the girl that he's interested in, and if you really kind of look at it from that perspective, a lot of the show starts to make sense. And yet, the thing is that I feel like they underplayed it so much that it comes across as too serious at times. And I think that that's what the first few episodes suffered from, is that they tried to strike a balance between this tongue-in-cheek, wink-wink, we're basically replicating a very specific era of martial arts films, because it is almost the era that this particular property came up through with anyway, and just completely misread it. Because they're so close. in episodes like this, I could easily see this with just a little bit more of a camp factor to it. It would have been perfect as that. That's exactly the way that this feels like it's being written. But it feels like it was written that way and intended that way, and then the director got their hands on it and tried to go too serious. You see, I don't know if you understand where I'm coming from with that.
Oh, yeah, no, I do. Exactly, yes.
Yeah, and I find now when I watch the show, if I look at it that way, it's a lot more enjoyable. A lot of my problems with the show go away. Because now it makes sense the way that it was written. Because you even see certain scenes where, like, it's not Joy, it's the brother.
Ward?
Maybe.
No,
it's something along those lines, though, but he is definitely, his entire character in the portrayal of the character would fit that perfectly.
Yes.
Even the dad, his characterization, would fit it perfectly. But it makes so much more sense out of how Danny is being portrayed, or even Colleen, because it's like, it's wink-wink, like, oh yeah, of course I know everybody in the town who's related to the Triads. Of course I do. Because that's what those kinds of movies would have done. So while I acknowledge that, I basically am acknowledging all of that and then saying that the execution was poor. I think that they did go very intentionally a certain way and then just didn't quite execute. In this episode, again, you know, Iron Fist is winding up a little bit at the bottom of our list all the time. And I think it's really indicative of the fact that they didn't quite think things through the way they perhaps should have. But there we are. It's still above a 7, technically.
Yeah.
So it's not horrible. But let's turn to our attention to shows that are definitely a lot more exciting for us. And that would be our top three. And in our third position, our number three position, we have The Expanse, Season 2, Episode 13, Caliban's War. The Rossi crew are forced to fight to save the ship. Boy, that leaves a lot out. And that came in at an average of 8.67. And yeah, you gave this one a 9, Gary.
I just really liked it. I thought they did a great job, as you said, portraying the hybrid creature, and all the things that they had to do to try and and coax it out of the ship. I love that type of hard science fiction. So yeah, I gravitated towards it, and I realized there were some weaknesses in the plots here and there, but this show, if you take it for what it is and where it could go to, I think this was a very solid show. I gave it a 9 total, and I don't think you can't say this was a bad episode. Was it a perfect episode? No, but geez, this if you had to rank the episodes that they've been running so far, the tension, the stress of the buildup with everything over again, I think this episode holds up really well, even against the first arc, if you want to call it that.
Oh yeah, and wow. I do say that this still feels like it's kind of stopping in the middle of a book. It doesn't feel like this was how the book would have ended.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
And I think that Edmund's comment says exactly the same, which is basically like, yes. Both events, the creature in the cargo bay and Bobby kicking button armor, are but the prelude to the final events in Caliban's War, the novel, which makes the naming of the episode that very odd.
Well, this is obviously their intention to string the books along in hopes of much like they did with the first season and a half, where the book didn't end till the next season. And if it gets renewed, that's great. If it doesn't, then geez, I guess I could say we're left hanging, but really we could just pick up the book, so it's not the end of the world. But yeah, no, it definitely left me wanting more. I'm curious of how the situation is going to resolve itself. The proto molecule is still in play, and I don't know if it's in play throughout all the book series, but definitely for book number two, it's still going strong, and I'm looking forward to season three. It was renewed, so we definitely have it, I believe so. So we have it to look forward to. So I won't sweat it too much. Wasn't it renewed, John?
Yes, it was renewed.
Yeah,
I'm very happy about that. I actually have the first novel sitting on my shelf, waiting for me to read it in a few weeks or over the next couple months, definitely over the summer.
Do you want to know what happens?
I think I kind of know.
Okay.
As closely as I've been paying attention lately. So, our number three show definitely coming in. Very happy with this second season. I feel like the second season picked things up big time over the first. I think that the events of the second book perhaps are more easily translated to a television type of adaptation, where I feel like the noir elements of the first book and the first season were a little obtuse for the audience, but clearly there is a growing fan base for this, so I hope that that's a good sign. I'm a little bit worried that the creators behind it kind of say that, you know, this story could be told in 6 or 7 seasons, because then I kind of take a step back and I would ask them, you are aware that not one show has ever made it past 5 seasons on this network, but maybe they're hoping they'll be the exception. But
maybe their cost structure is different. They figured it out already.
Maybe they did. I'm kind of hoping so. But at any rate, we don't have that problem with the next show, because it's already in its final season, and that is The Leftovers, Season 3, Episode 2, Don't Be Ridiculous. Nora goes to On business for the Department of Sudden Departure to investigate a possible scam that involves convincing family members of the departed that they can see their loved ones again. Ooh, insidious. And this one came in at an average of 8.75. Edmund says here, the now obligatory Nora-centric episode continues to deliver, and turning the Mark Lynn Baker throwaway gag into a twist so deeply resonant shows a sign of how confident this show had become. And it looks like it's just going to get deliciously weirder as we travel to Oz, and on what airline, I wonder, just to add the obligatory reference.
Grr! Grr! Yes.
That's right. I'm sure Oceanic is giving them a good discount. Jeez. After all, Damon Lindelof is one of the showrunners.
I'm waiting for one of those guys to complain how the airline treated them. You know, right? It was horrible.
Hey, look, these days, Oceanic is probably having a much better reputation than some other airlines.
Fair enough.
Just saying. When they get dragged out of those planes, no one has anything they can say because they're trapped on an island forever. Anyway.
See how insidious they are.
Yes. Yes, so Edmund gave this one a 9. I gave it an 8.5. I wasn't quite as high on it. But still, I love the fact that every episode of this season has been opening with a different song that is somehow connected to the episode. And in this case, the Perfect Strangers theme song was a perfect way to start. Very insane, very inspired. It worked perfectly because, of course, one of the cast of that show was, you know, in the episode as himself. So, and yeah, Nora's continuing existential crisis is, oddly enough, just ridiculously entertaining to watch. As has been the case with The Leftovers, it is not easy TV to watch, but it is fascinating and sometimes hilarious the way that things take place. So if you can laugh at somebody's, you know, staring into the abyss, you know that somebody's doing something right with the material. What I find really interesting here is that Colony, in its second season, had really picked up, and Carlton Cuse, one of the other people involved with Lost, sorry Gary, but I'm going down this rabbit hole for a reason.
Okay.
For whatever criticisms people may or may not have had for Lost and for Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, they each went on to properties since then that have been pretty well praised. You know, Carlton Cuse has been involved in a lot of things, but like Bates Motel is one of them. That had a pretty strong following, but Colony is a show that I thought started off a little bit rough, but then really went into some deeply disturbing and thought-provoking territory in its second season. Definitely a huge improvement over what we thought the premise was. And now, you know, Lindelof, on the other side of things, took The Leftovers and started off that show as a pretty straight-up adaptation of the novel for the first season, and then has managed to really turn the show into something completely different. And in its own way, this show is kind of his opportunity to take some of the spiritual themes of Lost that didn't quite land for people and explore them in a different way that I think is reaching its intended audience far more effectively. So I guess what my point is about that is that regardless of your thoughts of that show, the two main showrunners have kind of learned some lessons from that, I believe, and are delivering some pretty strong material as a result. Even if you'd like to take Lindelof and take him behind Starfleet headquarters with a baseball bat after some of the things that he's blamed for Into Darkness, but I don't know that was entirely his fault either.
No, I just wondered what he's thinking from time to time. But other than that, you know, I don't bear the man any ill will. But
that's right. And like I said, they're making good for sure. with this. I have a feeling that for the people who kind of ride this out, there's going to be a lot of feelings of, at least, maybe not closure would be the best way to put it, but I feel like there's going to be an emotionally resonant ending to this, which is more than I would have expected when it started.
Well, I swore it off a long time ago, so I will take your word for it.
I'll tell you right now, Gary, it's not the show for everyone.
Yeah.
And it is one of those things where if I'm not even in remotely close to the right mental state to watch it, I don't get anywhere near it.
So it hasn't become a feel-good show.
It is not a feel-good show, but it's...
There hasn't been a musical episode?
Not as such.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay.
But yes. Beating that one out, though, universally, with a 9, we have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Season 4, Episode 19, All the Madam's Men. Daisy finds herself teamed up with an unlikely partner. Meanwhile, Ada prepares to put her ultimate endgame into action. And everyone gave this one a 9, including Edmund, who said, very strong episode as the team starts to reassemble. Love the ending with Coulson coming back into his own. And I just love the fact that every single episode of this Agents of Hydra arc has managed to directly comment on current events in the dialogue somewhere. That's pretty bold. And I can't say that I'm too upset by it.
As we said, they're doing it well.
Yes. Any thoughts on this particular episode, though, Gary? Because you also gave it a 9. We all did.
Oh,
so.
Oh, geez. I wouldn't quite call it. It's. I was trying to think. You know, what would have made it a 10? Maybe if Hydra was defeated. I'm not sure if Ward was able to make it back through the through the thing. There were so many things that I'm sort of hoping will end this arc with, and I don't know that I'll get any of them, but. But I realize what that means is I'm hopeful and optimistic about the series. I'm enjoying it. I love to see the original team back together again. It's fun. And as Edmund commented, you see these glints of the true Coulson starting to reassert itself, especially now that Patriot's dead. Everything's sort of sinking back into place a little bit, and that's nice. You still have the heartache over Gemma wanting to get Fitz back, but it's not a horrible tension. And gosh, who would ever thought 3 years ago Fitz is going to be the big bet? I would have lost that bet. And but they're doing it very well. He's the actor is playing it very believably, and I'm enjoying this, and like I said, I think they're doing it well. I enjoy how people who might have quote started off on Hydra side are turning around, be it Daisy coming through, coming into the world, or be it Coulson's, his eyes being opened up to all the things soap aside that have really been happening. And it's very fun and enjoyable. It's great entertainment. It's a good driving storyline. I'm getting twists. I'm getting turns, and I'm sort of nail biting on how exactly it will end. Of course, we know the majority of our I'm sure our cast will come through fine, but gosh, who knows what permutations it'll take in the meantime? So we'll just have to wait and see. But I'm anxious about it, and if it's keeping me on the edge, I want to know what's going on next, and I'm watching it almost live. It's going well. How about you? I mean, we all gave it about the same score, John. Is there a particular point that stands out to you either about the arc so far or this episode?
Well, I think the thing about the arc I keep coming back to is that this feels like a victory lap. There are so many things that are working for me right now. I love the way that they brought Ward back. I love the way that they are treating the character. And he's kind of the character as he was originally presented to us. Which is interesting to note, because at no time was the character actually that good-hearted ally. He was always playing everybody, and yet here we have a version of the character that in this twisted Agents of Hydra world is actually the good guy. So it's kind of an interesting take on things, but who would have imagined that the character that was in many cases considered to be almost like a, what's the word that I would use for it? He was kind of described as the most bland character on the show back in the day.
Yeah, he was just the grunt, yeah.
Yeah, and now we have so many layers to it that I'm really glad that the actor has been able to kind of come full circle on it. But that's exactly the feeling that I get, is that we're continuing to go full circle. The one that's really surprising me is Fitz. Although I don't know that people should be as surprised they are about Fitz, because there have been many hints over the years that there's a darker side to him. And we're finally getting to see it. Even earlier this season, there were intimations that he was willing to cross certain lines. Now, I know that there are some people who are saying, there, you know, taking Fitz and making him like a modern-day Mangala is probably not as a valid choice, but quite frankly, there are elements to the framework that are... It's not saying that this is what the people are like for real. It's how they've been reprogrammed. And maybe there's a little bit of a facile way for that to be treated, but I find it fascinating that these characters will or could end up having to face the choices that they made while they were under the Idea's influence in the framework. And that could be a really interesting place for them to go if they have enough time to do so before the end of the season. And, you know, I always come back to this. I have a feeling this is the end of the series. If [S2] Really? [S1] They come back again next year, I'll be stunned. The ratings have never really been good. We're now getting into year 5. Unless Disney / Marvel / whoever you want to call it, all have some kind of grand plan that involves letting this ride regardless of the ratings, I can't imagine that they're going to continue to have this. I mean, they're not getting rid of cast members that often. So it's starting to get, it would start to get a little more, you know, progressively more expensive. Mm. Granted, it's an in-house thing. It may be very cheap for them.
Yeah, but, no rights to pay. No.
Yeah, but at the same time, I just feel like the patience is going to run out sooner or later, right? So I'm hoping I'm wrong. I would be very happy to be wrong. But, you know, season 4 or 5 is usually when you start looking and say, when is the patience going to run out? Not every show turns out to be as fortunate as, say, a Supernatural, where there is a dedicated enough fan base that they feel justified to keep the show running 12, 13 years.
Well, they signed a deal with the devil. Sorry.
Well, I'm wondering if about season 5 they made a deal with the Crossroads Demon, so season 15 things get very ugly, but the fact that you knew to laugh at that was indicative of a few things. But yes, I'll be happy if they continue, but there's a part of me that also sits back and says, if they do continue, are they going to have an ending that's going to be any more perfect than the way that they're doing things right now? So, we'll see. It's not like I want it to end. It's just that I have a feeling that that's what they're hedging their bets to do. All right, since we have a little bit of time left for this particular episode, maybe not a huge amount, but is there anything else here on the list that you would like to jump into?
Yes, I did not watch it, so I will let you carry this burden, but I am curious. I saw the first episode of Class, and I was extremely underwhelmed. I didn't feel that it had a clear direction. I felt it was very broadly painted. Most of the characters never, even in the pilot, felt like I got any development out of them. Tell me things get better in episode 2.
Okay, well, what we have here is Class, Series 1, Episode 2, The Coach with the Dragon Tattoo. Ram struggles to accept his new reality following the devastating events at prom. I gave this one an 8. I'm still not sold on the premise. I feel like they overcomplicated the premise. They could have just made this, you know, students dealing with monsters or what have you, and it would have been perfectly fine. The whole, you know, kind of intergalactic prince thing is a little unnecessary. That all having been said, this episode seemed to settle down a little bit and give you a look at the kind of day-to-day life issues of these characters, at the same time as having a fun little adventure with the coach with the dragon tattoo. Literally, it is a coach with a dragon tattoo. But the thing that kind of sticks out to me is that the one thing this show can do that I haven't really gotten the sense from the other spin-offs is this does a really nice job of showing you what it would really be like for a bunch of high schoolers to try to survive in the world of Doctor Who, where every other day there's another freaking thing going on that's threatening to kill you. It actually makes a lot of sense to say that, you know, have we ever seen... I know that there was the Sarah Jane Adventures, but that's a little bit different even in my mind. But we've never really seen a show where it's kind of like, oh, great. You know, everything was going fine, but my freaking leg got amputated and I've got this kind of prosthetic thing going on and I have to try and figure out how to live on from here. And it approaches it from a really interesting perspective. And even just the fact that, you know, oh, I'm going to school and great, now there's like this dragon running around trying to eat me. It's like, yeah, this stuff happens in the Doctor Who universe all the time. Living in London in Doctor Who universe must just seriously suck. And, I mean, just look at the events that have happened on the main show. You don't know from day to day whether or not there's going to be a major invasion, the government's going to be taken over. Yeah, it's just...
You're going to be taken over. Yeah.
Get the hell out of London. You know, Brexit takes on a very different meaning in the Doctor universe. But I think that this show actually, that is the one strength I believe of this show, is that it's exploring that in some good ways. Is it the fact that it ranks higher that right now than Doctor Who itself says a few things. Granted, it's a half point difference, but that's you know, significant when we're looking at various people giving scores. So, yeah, it's not great. This particular episode I liked a lot because of that whole aspect of the lived-in universe, but, yeah, I'm still kind of taking it from week to week. Let's see. I think that we're already pretty far into this one, so I guess what we can do is the rundown, unless you had any other shows that you wanted to talk about.
No, I'm good. We can go through.
Okay, so starting off here in the middle of the pack, we had Better Call Saul, Season 3, Episode 3, Sunk Costs, which got an 8.5. Since that, yeah, Edmund gave that one the 8.5, and I'll try and get his comment here. A Major League nefarious plot by Mike, who also has to jump through some hoops that led to Gus Fring at last. Meanwhile, Jimmy wearily winds up on the wrong side of the law. Yes, setup is going on, but BCS is doing, Better Call Saul is doing it much more entertainingly than The Americans. Yes, Edmund and I both kind of finding this season of The Americans a little bit, underwhelming, let's put it that way. But he'll probably have more to say about that in his comments as we go. We also had The Flash, Season 3, Episode 19, The Once and Future Flash, which was an interesting episode. That one came in at an 8.5. Gary, just as very briefly, you seem to like this one quite a bit, where I'm still a little bit wary of this season so far.
Well, I start to flinch anytime Barry talks about time travel anymore, because it never turns out well. But that being said, I thought this was a interesting idea to do that, and I loved the, I guess, future vibe with getting the whole team back together again, to see like there could be, you know, that there's that the younger Barry brought back hope into what is now a bleak place. And I like that sense that it's what Barry does best. You know, he inspires. And so even now, after years of not being around these people and the current self being so apathetic, Barry can still, you know, rally all these people together. And that I like that sort of positive message about that, you know, there's still hope, there's still a chance, you can, you know, we can make things better after this. I felt like, oh, maybe he does have a chance after Savitar, you know, he can, you know, get his team back going again. It was, I found it somewhat hopeful, at least, if not optimistic, when this episode was over. So,
Well, there's at least that. We also had The Magician, Season 2, Episode 13, the second season finale. We Have Brought You Little Cakes, came in at an 8. Into the Badlands, Season 2, Episode 6, Leopard Stalks in Snow, came in at an 8, as did Outcast, Season 2, Episode 4, The One I'd Be Waiting For, and The Americans, Season 5, Episode 8, Immersion. And on that one, Edmund giving this an 8 said, the scene with Paige was the highlight, especially the subtle setup with Elizabeth staring at the repaired sheetrock where she killed said rapist back in Season 1. But overall, the pacing this season is slowing to a crawl. This may be a case when getting a two-season pickup is a liability. How much are they holding back for the final one? Actually, I agree to that. When they were given a kind of two seasons to wrap up the entire series, it does feel like it gave them a bit too much license to stretch things out. It's unfortunate. Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 18, Ace Reporter, came in at a 7.5. Prison Break, Season 5, Episode 4, The Prisoner's Dilemma, came in at 7.5. And finally, iZombie, Season 3, Episode 4, Wag the Tongue Slowly, came in at 7.5. So that's it for this particular week's episodic discussion. When we come back next time, we'll be bringing ourselves up to date. So, until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.